And welcome to Sit for Speaks, the podcast where we explore the latest issues in public financial management affecting people, place and planet. I'm your host, Jess, and today we're delving into reforms and routes forward to fix England's broken special educational needs and disabilities SEND system. Over the past decade, demand for children's services has surged 2.6 times faster than the growth of the under 18 population. At the same time, the number of children with an education, health and care plan has increased by 140%. Despite the 58% funding increase now exceeding £10 billion spent on SEND, as highlighted by the National Audit Office's latest report, more funding has not led to better outcomes. Councils remain under immense financial strain, pushing the system to a breaking point. So where is the SEND system falling short and what are the solutions? Joining me today to provide expert insights is Dr. William Burns, SIP for Social Care Policy Advisor, and Emma Wilson, Director of Education Value for Money at the National Audit Office. Emma, hi, and thanks for joining me today. We know that demand for SEND services is at an all-time high, but how has demand changed over the past decade?
Thanks, Jess. So as you said, the NAO has estimated that in 2024, there was 1.9 million children and young people identified as having special educational need. Within that 1.9 million, there's 576,000 children with EHCP plans. So those educational health care plans, which are legally enforceable entitlements to specific support agreed with local authorities and with families building on a health assessment. As you mentioned up front, since 2015, there's been a 140% increase in children with these plans, with more plans being issued and fewer being stopped. All local authorities have seen increases which have ranged from 0.7% within Camden to 3.7% within Liverpool for those aged between 5 to 15 years living in their area. If you look more recently, there's been a 63% increase since 2019 alone. And really interesting, the largest increases has been for those aged between 25 years, children and young people move through the system, but also for children under 5 years, where there's been an 88% increase in children with EHCP plans. The two other things that I think is worth not forgetting as well is that alongside the 576,000 with EHCP plans, there's been a 14% increase in the number of children identified as having special educational needs, but without a plan. Those children still need additional support in their school setting. The other thing to note is that on the increased demand is that there have been particular increases across certain identified needs, which have significantly contributed to the overall increase of 140%, which obviously impacts the specialist support required and the relevant costs and pressures across the system. Taking, for example, on EHCP plans, there's been an 86% of the increase in the last few years has related to autistic spectrum disorders, which have increased 40% since 2018-19. Speech, language and communication needs has also seen increases as social, emotional and mental health needs.
Will, hi, thanks for joining us today. What are your thoughts on how we can reform the SEND system?
Hi, Jess. So to start thinking about how we should reform the SEND system, it's helpful to set out some principles for a system that can effectively meet need and which is financially sustainable. So this is where we begin with our latest report. So our principles centre on funding, early intervention, coordination between partners, market management and accountability. And I'll go through them and explain a little bit about each one. First one is that funding is holistic, needs-based and responsive to local and cohort demand and complexity. So the current funding formula is outdated and costs, as Emma has spoken about, have risen dramatically. It aims to better direct funding toward need, demand and complexity and meeting need earlier at a cohort level where possible. The second principle is that spending is rebalanced towards early identification and intervention to improve outcomes using a consistent standardised outcomes framework. So currently there's no consensus on what works best in early intervention and what successful outcomes look like. So establishing a shared understanding of best practices and defining measurable outcomes would allow needs to be met early and to avoid escalation of need. The third principle is that financial resources are well coordinated between education, health, public health and care partners. So, for example, contributions to support packages from partners vary from place to place. So creating a framework for how education, health and care partners contribute to support packages can create consistency across the country. Fourth principle is that the role of the independent sector is reformed to reduce cost, tackle profiteering and address inequality. So the cost of independent placements is too high and the quality of services is inconsistent. So reforming the independent places market will help drive consistency, quality and value for money. And then the fifth principle is that financial accountability follows decision making. So who's accountable for what in the SENS system can be unclear, and the financial responsibility for decision making is unevenly apportioned between partners. So SITFA's final principle focuses on improving transparency and accountability between those partners. So we suggest that it's from these principles that we should begin thinking about how to reform the system. And in our report, we use those principles to make recommendations to the government across the short, medium and longer term.
Thanks, Will. And Emma, following the National Audit Office's report, what can government do to address the system-wide issues at present?
Yeah, I think we often talk about the system, but I think it's first worthwhile stepping back and thinking about what we mean by the system. I think the first thing to note is that the legislation, so going back to the Children and Families Act and the statutory code of practice that follows on from that, sets out some really clear roles and responsibilities with specific duties for local authorities, health bodies, schools, colleges, and so on. And local authorities play a real central role of that with statutory duties to consider views, wishes and feelings of children, and so on. The relationships between these bodies can really impact how effectively the system as a whole works, and that's what we're really getting at. In the NEO report, we found that although these organisations have those clear responsibilities, there are misaligned priorities and incentives within that system design, which really creates some real challenges to that whole system approach. And it really is how the system has been designed and how it operates in practices that has to be addressed. So in terms of what government can do to address those issues, I mean, there's no single answer, but it's about breaking down to understand where there are those misaligned incentives and where it's not working. For example, people may well know local authorities are held to account for delivering outcomes for children and young people with SEND, but they have limited levers to encourage changes within schools and within health services. Within health itself, you know, health obligations to undertake assessments to identify needs, but whereas special education leaders are a real high priority for local authorities and schools, within the NHS Integrated Care Boards, for example, they have a broad range of objectives and priorities to which they're working towards. And SEND just relates to two of 32 competing priorities across kind of SEND. So we really recommend that actually governments take a step back, you know, DfE and wider government as well, working together to build a more integrated system that ensures people have accountability, can act, consider where multidisciplinary teams can be brought together, but also to really develop a shared understanding of how SEND special educational needs should be prioritised against all the other pressures that local government, central government and wider government are facing.
And Emma, how can the Department for Education build evidence and insights to inform better decision making?
So there's a few aspects to this. What is really critical is they need to be building these evidence and insights in the right areas. And I think my report points out that actually it could do much better to think about the how in particular areas. So first thinking about those kind of root causes, we started the conversation talking about the 140% increase in demand. What we found in the report is that the broad range of reasons as to why demand has increased, but DfE hasn't yet undertaken work to understand the root causes behind those, to understand how it should respond and whether that bond should be educational, societal or health related to address those challenges. They also need to really understand need and how that's changed and the spaces and the capacity it has available within the current system to support different needs. And what we found is that the DfE doesn't know with confidence how much capacity should be planned for and where to meet those future needs. Another recommendation was around building that evidence on how many places different settings can work in, particularly mainstream settings, but with a focus on inclusive education. They have succeeded to build that understanding when thinking about special schools. So from 2023 onwards, it's shown how it can do that. And it's also shown, as it's built information on special school capacity, the importance of that information. You know, based on what it knows now, the data it has on special schools shows that special schools are over capacity, which may lead to poor value for money. It's estimated based in building this evidence base that at least 4,000 pupils that don't have a space in a special school. And within those special schools, 63% are over capacity, supporting an additional 9,500 extra pupils. So that's kind of really why it matters. The other quick area, just to quickly reference in terms of how to build those evidence and insights, is around working with local authorities to build insights of what they're doing. We found variation across local authorities in a number of areas. picking out those educational healthcare plans and how timely they are. We found some local authorities issued 1% of these within the 20-week statutory limit compared to 100% in other areas. So there's definitely insights to be built and to be gathered and to be shared from drawing from kind of local authorities. So we made specific recommendations around that as well.
That's really interesting. Thank you. And Will, talk to me about reforming the role of the independent sector. How can we go about doing this?
So the independent sector is hugely important in the SEND system, and independent special schools and other organisations and specialists are providing really critical services to meet the needs of children and young people with SEND. But unfortunately, we know that there are excess profits being made in parts of the system, and that there can be inconsistency in the quality of services and outcomes achieved and in value for money. So we do make a few recommendations regarding reforming the role of the independent sector. So these are across the short, medium and longer term. So in the short term, the government should introduce national rate bands according to level of need. And this will help remove outliers and bring down excess profits in places. In the medium term, the government should introduce a quality assurance framework for private advice and provision, setting out expectations from providers and providing councils with an accountability mechanism. And in the longer term, we recommend introducing a national SEND contract to drive consistency in how SEND services are commissioned, the cost of services, how they are evaluated, and the value for money for councils. So these recommendations can help improve the independent sector, effectively meet the need of children and young people, and bring about service and financial sustainability for councils.
And I know we've talked about the importance of using reform to resolve conflicts quicker. Why is this such an important aspect of SEND reform to focus on?
It's an important aspect to focus on because the experiences of families with children and young people with SEND is one of facing a combative and adversarial system. So since the SEND reforms were introduced over 10 years ago, we've seen over a fivefold increase in the number of appeals taken to tribunal, with local authorities losing almost all of them. So it's clear that not enough is being done to bring people together to avoid cases reaching that stage by resolving disputes earlier. So we need improved mediation so that resources aren't being directed towards legal battles. And part of this is also ensuring that mainstream settings are more inclusive and that they're better equipped to meet the needs of children and young people, as some families don't believe that their children's needs can be met in the mainstream settings that are available to them. So schools need to be supported to take on greater accountability for SEND and to be more inclusive and to be able to meet needs in those mainstream settings. Finally, local authorities do need greater flexibility in meeting need when a tribunal passes its judgment, because currently the legal framework allows for far-reaching directive powers to name specific provision and so on. And this can undermine councils' ability to meet need while achieving value for money. So we need improved mediation, more inclusion in mainstream settings, and greater flexibility in the legal framework to meet need.
Thanks, Will. I'd like to ask you both, what's one thing you'd want our audiences to take away from today's discussion? Emma, I'll start with you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Jess. So, I mean, everybody, the Department for Education, government, equally recognises the challenges across the system and the need for wholesale system reform. So me saying that is not going to add anything new to the debate. But I think my one takeaway would be that any response, any set of reforms, any kind of new agenda must be based on a really good, solid evidence base of what worked. It needs to be ambitious, you know, to address the challenges within the system, but also that has to be translated into a tangible implementation approach, setting out what needs to be done, by when, how much it will cost, what are the kind of the trade-offs or the wider impacts across the system, to actually make sure all the kind of the initiatives and the new ideas and the change actually happens, and actually those kind of positive changes for essentially to allow better outcomes for children with special educational need, which is what this is all about, actually put into effect.
Thank you. And Will, what's one thing you'd like our audiences to take away?
I mean, I'd fully agree with everything that Emma just said there. But for me, it would be that we're speaking about really crucial services for children and young people with special educational needs and disabilities. And it's really important that we can meet their needs and support them to achieve the best outcomes that they possibly can. But the current system isn't working for anyone, the children themselves, their families, and councils. councils are facing financial ruin from the way the system currently operates. If councils do run out of money, they issue Section 114 notices, and it's not only going to impact SENS services, it's going to impact every other service that councils deliver. So we need to urgently reform the system to ensure the sustainability of services for children and young people with SEND, to improve the experiences of their families, and to achieve financial sustainability for councils. And SIPFA provides a roadmap for the government for taking on that journey.
Thanks, Will, and thank you both. To find out more, our audiences can read the reports from both SIPFA and the National Audit Office. For those listening, make sure to follow us on social media for more and never miss another episode. Previous episodes can be found on SIPFA's website or wherever you like to listen to podcasts. We'll be back next month. Until then, goodbye.